from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is the Good Atheist.
Welcome to the GoodAtheist.net bonus podcast. My name is Jacob Forte.
And I'm Ryan Harkness.
Now, I want to make a confession about what's been going on recently. I've been feeling fat in the past little while. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about, Ryan. But I've been feeling rotund.
Yeah, I've been feeling like a fat piece of shit, too.
Yeah.
It's natural. As you get older and older, you look at your body and you say, It is no longer teenage ease to keep up appearances.
It's kind of like the first few years where you buy a new car. I've never owned a car, but I know how people feel about it. They'll drive it for the first couple years, and it works great. There's barely any problems, just a little bit of upkeep and whatever. But then you hit that magical year where everything breaks down on your car, and then you hate it.
And you know what? You haven't been changing the oil. You have not been keeping an eye on the antifreeze.
Nope, there's... Nope.
You've been doing everything wrong.
You didn't think ahead. You were like, this car is so perfect, what could possibly go wrong? Not realizing that slowly, but surely.
But thank God, at least for the auto industry, people buy new cars every couple of years. Unfortunately, this is not quite the possibility that we have when it comes to our bodies.
Yeah, you can't buy a new body.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe in the future, maybe in some crazy future, you're buying a new body. But now you're stuck with what you got.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to use it pretty good. And I realize that I am not using it very good at all, that I need to make some changes. Now, unfortunately, because I'm trying to burn the candle at both ends, doing the Good Atheist stuff and working full time, the added thing of, hey, you need to go and work out, it's like, that's not happening. You cherish your free time way too much. You're like, no, I want to do nothing. I am tired. I want to veg. And let's face it. I mean, sometimes as enjoyable as it can be to do physical, you know, work and working out, stuff like that, a lot of times it's just...
Well, you know what?
Drudgery.
Arnold Schwarzenegger says it's like coming. He says working out is like coming. Like afterwards, the burn when he flexes and it kind of hurts, that's like coming. It's all awesome. He says his life is just nothing but one endless cum.
Right. That have you been rewatching the Pumping Iron?
I saw some funny YouTube clips where he talks all about it.
Again, yeah, I think I saw the same one.
Yeah. So.
Yes, it was also stuck in my head, and I hate you for putting it back in. Yeah, every time I work out, it's like I'm coming.
You gotta turn that pain into pleasure, man.
Yeah. There's something really disgusting and wrong though about hearing Arnold Schwarzenegger talk about coming. It's just not right. I don't know what it is.
He's a virile young man.
Maybe it's just the fact
that he could talk about coming forever and it's okay. He's our prize stock.
See, I just think it's because I've spent decades watching him kill people on the screen and then never cursing when he does it. He's like the polite murderer. He doesn't swear at you or call you names or say anything about orifices.
Well, you know, PG-13.
Yes, he's a PG-13 hero. And his language is matches. That's why it's so freaky whenever he says stuff like that. It's still, I don't know.
Well, I was just thinking, you know, maybe you want to be a little bit more like Arnold instead of like Jacob. When I work out, I don't like it. Come, Jacob. Come.
I'm so lazy.
Too lazy to come?
Sometimes. I'm that lazy.
Hmm.
I'm just like, it's not going to happen. Going to go to sleep. Now, on today's show, we're going to be talking about two subjects. The first one, we're going to be talking about guess who got revisited by some Jehovah Witnesses, everybody.
At this point, excuse me.
Wow, that was... Thank you, Kermit. Ryan, if you would.
At this point, you're just in their scheduled rotation.
I guess
tough
so.
Nuts.
They have a plan. They have a plan in mind, and I'm watching it unfold.
You know, it's funny. You keep thinking that you see weaknesses in them. Maybe they keep coming because they see weakness in you.
Well, they've always left with their tails between their legs. But not in a I'm scared way, but kind of like, okay, well, we've exhausted any arguments that we have left. It's time for us to go now.
Okay, well, let's just refresh the first two, set us up with the first two, and then bring us into the third.
Well, the second topic that we're going to be talking about is an email that I received from a patron who, a quite generous patron, in fact, who wanted us to talk about our view of the world in an atheist perspective, and also we'll talk about his letter and what we got, what the vibe we got out of him and his friends, which I think everyone will find enjoyable. And of course, in the midst of all this, more commercials. I'm doing that whole rule of threes.
More commercial?
Yeah, more commercial. Maybe I'll even run it twice. Because, you know, they have this whole, there's this whole theory that you have to run something three times before it sticks in somebody's head. So every time I make a commercial, you're at least hearing it three times, bitches. So you just got to get used to it.
My goodness.
This is the new world. Are you ready for it? Are you ready for the same commercial? Because eventually it'll be ingrained in your mind being, let me go buy a shirt. Shirts are available. Go buy them. It's indoctrination.
They are fashionable.
They are fashionable.
There's a dude in Norway who just got shipped his Jesus Saves shirts. I'm sure he's going to be happy with those in 2 weeks, however long the Nordic postal system takes.
Well, he's going to be very grateful, and once he's done in an orgasmic haze, pushing off all the hot bitches that will stick to him like glue. Guaranteed.
Warning, not a guarantee.
But first, yes, let's go back. Topic number one, the Johos, as they sometimes are referred to.
Is that an offensive? You called someone a Joho, like a Jehovah's Witness, a Joho to their face. Is that like cracking out the N-word or something?
Yeah, I don't think it's really that bad. It's probably the derogatory term, but I just like it because it's shortened. It's very shortened.
I like it because it's got ho in it.
Yeah. In different area codes.
Yeah, that's my six-year-old coming out.
There's nothing wrong with that, I say. Just
keep it to yourself.
Keep it to yourself, exactly. So for those of you that are uninitiated, if you haven't heard any of the older podcasts and you're just joining us now, I'm going to cover back the story. So the first time they came over, it was two ladies. There was
the young hot one.
Well, both of them were not young. They were quite old, but one of them was far older. And it was funny because they always have this person who's being trained and the superior person in terms of their knowledge of the Bible, their converting technique.
Okay,
right?
Okay. Well, they had the foxy mama, and then they had old grandma.
They had old grandma.
Yeah.
And old grandma was not very familiar at all with the Bible. So whenever when someone's super not familiar, you're just lobbing in the easy ones, right? Where you're pulling out these these stories that you know grandmas don't want to hear, like the story of Onan, which is one of my favorite ones in the Bible. Everybody always
knows
that.
All the time.
I do. I just love it. I love how God kills someone directly for not coming inside his brother's widow. I just love it. I mean, it is disgusting. When a person says, like, that it's inappropriate, I'd be like, that's your Bible right there. That's inappropriate. Your damn book is inappropriate.
It's a sticky situation this week in the Bible.
So I was lobbing in some easy ones. You know, I wasn't necessarily being fair, but I was trying to be polite because, you know, at the end of the day, I know that it might seem strange considering the fact that last show I was giving Phil Plait a hard time about this whole don't be a dick thing. But honestly, when I have conversations with people that come to convert me, I am never a dick. I mean, number one, if you're a dick, they're just going to leave. You don't want them to leave. You want them to stay. You want to hear them talk. And number two, I actually genuinely want to know why believers believe. You know, I'm not going to convince them while they're here. All I want to do is I want to show them that other individuals who don't believe what they do are just as comfortable, if not more comfortable, with their ideas than they are. Because I think that sometimes that very notion is something that people just need to be reminded of when they're so self-assured, where they're saying, like, well, how could you live without the knowledge of God? It's easy, dude.
There's a whole lot of other knowledge out there that's even better, slightly more factually accurate at times.
Yeah. I look at you and sometimes I feel the same way, but I realize that there would be an irony if I dismissed that feeling entirely. Because I could say, well, I'm the person that may have the hubris. I'm the person that may be wrong. I try to keep that in mind. The thing that I always want people that come in to attempt to do, which I know is impossible for them, is I always put that forward, that challenge of saying, well, listen, I can put myself in your mindset. Can you put yourself in mine? To really put yourself in mind. This is the challenge that most religious people will just absolutely and utterly say no to. In fact, if you're a good Christian, you should say no.
Yeah, you're the devil's mind.
Right. Well, the whole problem is if you deny even the Holy Ghost in the Bible, you're going to hell. There's nothing you can do. Deny the Holy Ghost. Jesus says this twice in the New Testament, and you will go directly to hell, man. It's like a do not pass go. Go directly to jail, man.
Isn't that just Catholics, though?
No. This is
everybody?
Yeah. Like, people will just, you deny the Holy Ghost, man, it is the worst. It is the worst. Some people don't make a big deal out of the Holy Ghost, but you'll find that most evangelicals, that's the big deal, right?
That's why you need to be born again.
Well, no, born again is to get a new relationship with Jesus, okay? But there's still no denying the Holy Ghost. It's like, don't even fucking do that. Here are some images of hell where you will burn forever if you even think about that.
So it's kind of like if you have a friend in high school that you have like a huge falling out with, you can become friends with them again by being born again. But that's like only with Jesus.
But only with Jesus, right. The whole thing is, think of it as a good cop, bad cop routine, right? It's the classic one. So you got Jesus, who's Mr. Fucking Nice Guy, and meanwhile you got the Holy Spirit that even if you deny or you say anything against it, you are fucked. All right, doesn't matter. You could go to the nice cop and say, "Hey, what the hell?" And you're just like, "Sorry, man. He's this bad cop. He's on chain. He's going to go to fucking ape shit on you.
Holy
you're dead
Spirit
meat."
Has priority.
He has. You cannot diss him because he is present at all times. He's kind of that. You know, he's like Big Brother. He's spiritual Big Brother. So you better fucking believe it all the time. All right. Anyways, I feel like I'm going on a tangent. So I like to put forward this challenge. I know that it won't necessarily be taken, but I think it's an important one for people to remember. Is just saying, like, look, if you're not even willing to put yourself in my shoes, look through my lens, then what guarantee do you have that yours is the you know, truthful? Honestly, why are you so afraid of it being challenged? I hope that there are people that listen to this podcast that feel that they're doing this to challenge themselves, and maybe they have answers for it. Like, if you have answers for my fucking challenges, congratulations. You must work pretty hard for those.
Well, this was their third trip back, so they came back with specific answers to someone. Like, it was they first came in before I had my chance to get up and get the fuck out of room, because I don't like paying attention to these people at all. But they already had started going into your Judas story, which is what you confounded them with the second time.
That's right.
Was it Foxy Lady's husband?
Yes, that's right.
Foxy Mama's husband came by. Him and who was with him?
I wish I could remember the name of the
Just
the
give
other
him
fellow.
Some funny...
We'll call him Rex.
Was he Rex? Was he like a youthful kid?
No.
Then why are you giving him a name like Rex?
Well, like I don't view Rex as youthful. I view Rex as like that old name that never took on, you know, that never really went anywhere. And now a whole bunch of weird middle-aged guys are called Rex. And quite clearly, you're just like, the Rex in you is gone. Now you're old Rex. Does that make any sense to you?
Old Rex can't even get an erection.
Right. He has erectile dysfunction.
Poor Rex.
Poor Rex indeed.
Okay, so Rex was there.
Rex, and Rex was clearly much more knowledgeable and probably more educated than, we'll call the other Dimitri. I don't quite remember his name. He's a Russian fellow.
With the Foxy Mama.
Now, when talking to Rex, which was really interesting, and this is the part that I love. So they come over, they basically have an answer for me in regards to the question of the two different types of death that occur to Judas in the New Testament. One is that he's in his field, all of a sudden his, you know, stomach splits open, his guts spill out, and he dies. In the second version, he feels remorse and he hangs himself. So they come over and they have prepared for me an explanation as to why that is. Now, the explanation I had already read, by the way. I knew what the explanation was. I was kind of curious to see if they would pull that one up. So I didn't want to answer the question for them. I wanted them to come back anyways. The answer is that he hangs himself near a cliff and the tree breaks and cuts and he cuts his gut on the rocks. And that's the explanation.
And then the cliff is overlooking the field? Is that what it is?
So he can. Well, there's no mention of no. They don't mention the field. They don't care about the field.
Okay.
They're saying that the field is probably a mistranslation of something. Who cares? Shut the fuck up. We obviously have a ludicrous answer. Mm-hmm. So, after patiently listening to their lengthy explanation and ending, by the way, with saying, "With the topography of Israel, it is not unreasonable to assume that this could be true." So, my first thing was saying, like, "Listen, gentlemen, I had a conversation with them prior to them whipping out the whole Judas thing about the necessity for intellectual integrity." And I feel that Rex got it to some degree. Like he was like, "Yes, I believe in intellectual integrity as well. And I've done my research and I feel that there is some integrity there." So I told him.
I like how that term feels like a trap that you're about to snap shut on them.
So I mentioned that I feel that I tell him honestly, I'm like, "Look, you have to understand that it's not just the story that's different now. If you accept that version of it, one version, which is that Judas feels remorse, and the other one is that he basically gets killed by God, a punishment, if you will. Both of these two things are vastly different outcomes. They're different morals relating to the story. And now that you've basically decided, no, it's the original hanging, now you're removing the remorseful Judas." And I argue with them that saying, like, "Look, you have to examine this from purely an allegorical perspective, because sometimes a story can be so important that you have to say it in two different ways, that it just can't end one way. There's another ending that you need to hear, but unfortunately what might suffer is the continuity of that story. You might have to be like, oh, this doesn't make any sense.
It's like there needs to be a new Star Wars series, but we need to completely destroy everything George Lucas has done since the first three."
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. In that process, we're talking about a complete obliteration of it, like Library of Alexandria kind of. Whoosh! The world will not miss you.
We need to burn down Skywalker Ranch.
No, but it's everywhere else, though. It's in people's computers. You would need to just expunge the internet, because there would be a presence of that horror out there.
Do you think 10,000 years from now, the people worshipping Star Wars will take a look at that and say, well, in the third book
of... It's not canonical, they'll put it. They'll say, like, it's the Gospel of Thomas.
It's the TIE Fighter books. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. Exactly. It's the Game Boy Advanced game. I had this fucking joke with Jeff that every single game that comes out on a handheld is not official canon. They disregard it. They might as well never have existed. It's bullshit. So Rex, I felt, understood what I was saying with the intellectual integrity. I'm like, that is not an adequate explanation. You really, anybody who just decides that's valid has not only done, examine it from a perspective of a person who says, you have to interpret it correctly. You're making huge alterations to your interpretation to make the story fit. Why is it so wrong in the other version still?
Why won't you admit that you're wrong?
Yeah, pretty much. Now, obviously, I didn't want to delve into that. That wasn't my intent. The whole intent that I had, and this is the conversation that I had with Rex, because Dimitri by then had basically shut up. He was not able to participate in this discussion because, I was getting a lot more factual. I was talking about more abstract concepts that I just don't think he understood.
Too much time with Foxy Mama.
The Foxy Mama.
Softening brain, hardening other parts.
Right.
The blood not going to this part of my brain. This part of my body.
So yes, Dimitri was being quite silent, but Rex and I were having a very lively and, I felt, very rewarding intellectual discussion. I could tell that he was a lover of knowledge, and he was obviously well educated, and it kind of what struck me as saying, well, this is the one person that if I want to try to reach out to and communicate this message that they've obviously put themselves in. They've really fragmented and limited their perspective, their scope of the universe. They really have kind of like confined it to a much narrower view of saying, well, the Bible is the truth of the world. And you're like, the world is bigger than your book of myths. So much bigger. It's ludicrous that you're just caught in a time frame of only a few thousand years. Get off it, man. It's just, I felt, and here's what I thought was interesting about my conversation with him. I felt to some degree that the reason that he had come to believe in Christianity was because of the empathy that he has towards other people. He mentioned when being a young man of being moved by human kindness and goodness, but finding no explanation to why these existed. He turned to religion and found, oh, well, it's a gift from God. So really, at that point, the problem that I view in terms of how he decided to form his worldview is that he found something that I think is intellectually limiting, the Bible, to try to explain what he couldn't and yet was still feeling. And this is this was an important realization. I could obviously tell that he was a very soft-spoken, very gentle man, very respectful. I kept on trying to make sure. I'm like, you know, I didn't want to offend this guy because he looked like just one of those really sensitive types, you know, saying like, I hope I didn't offend you when I said that your apocalyptic vision of the future is disturbing. I hope that doesn't offend you, but it's the honest truth of how I feel, and I just I hope that doesn't injure you in any way.
What did you guys talk about, the end of the world?
No, I didn't go into it.
That should be for number four. Talk about it. I want to know, like, get some real nitty gritty into there. I want to know more about the Jehovah's Witness because they're obsessed with it, aren't they? They keep on putting out dates, and then God keeps on not.
Well, no, they stopped.
Everyone.
I think they stopped in the 1980s or 90s after just another, you know, string of disastrous predictions about when the earth would, when Jesus would come back, bring 100,000 up to him to heaven, and the rest would, you know, not go and be on earth. So they do have that particular apocalyptic belief, and I'm sure it permeates a lot of what they do. But I still didn't want that to necessarily limit the scope of our conversation, because that's a conversation stopper. That's obviously like, you're out of your tree. The world will end. You know, I was trying to explain to him that the reason why it upsets me is that we do live in a world where one person can make the decision to end a world. A person can do that. You know, they have to be in a high position of power to do it, but they can. And you have to wonder, I'm like, our level of technological sophistication continues to improve. Maybe one person just really can. Maybe a doomsday type of device really does exist. Do I want these kinds of people having these weird, apocalyptic, insane fucking worldviews? I don't. I really don't. It is not an interesting proposition. I find it disturbing. I think that anybody who
any religion
entertains
that
is scary.
And any religion that ends with the end of the world as opposed to, I don't know, humans working their way towards being more awesome seems kind of like a bad path to go down.
Yeah, and plus to base your beliefs on revelation, which is a bad trip if you've ever read one. I mean, most of the time, John Calvin's version of the Bible, he put in the fact that he was reluctant. And we're talking about this staunch,
Dick-faced Protestant
motherfucker, all right? Was like, I don't know if I should include this filth. It's utterly trashy, you know. It's the stuff of really bad, thrillers and novels and shit like that,
or horror trips,
or drug trips. Yeah, basically, like the worst of any kind of the Grateful Dead kind of songs, you know, just that horrible.
Yeah, that's all like laughing teddy bears and keep on trucking stuff. That's great and good. These are serpents eating serpents.
Yeah, true. It's far darker.
Yeah.
I was just talking about a drug haze, though, still. Because in a sense, though, it's all horrible, but the whole purpose is for the Roman Empire to fall and for a new world to emerge. So it's still their dream. maybe this is their hippie version of that back in the
You have to stop thinking about Revelations and hearing Grateful Dead music and like the Beatles when they had the sitar. Stop that. It's not right.
I guess not. But some people will definitely see it as that because they see themselves on the winning end of that. They're like, I'm going to be playing my harps and I'm going to be dancing up in heaven while
they're
all
down there with their hellish fucking guitar racket.
Oh, it's just... But back to the whole conversation with Rex. Now, I wanted to challenge him with some of the ideas that I had had recently and some of the compelling ideas. Like, for instance, I was trying to explain to him how I would view God communicating with us if he did in fact exist. And I used the analogy of an ant. I think I mentioned it in one of the shows where you can communicate with an ant by leaving chemical trails. And you can be aware of the ant and communicate with it even though it may not be aware of you or even understand or conceive of you. This is what I would say describe as the potential relationship between a God and a being like us. Would be something like, you know, us and an individual ant trying to leave chemical messages behind. But with that said, any individual, well, not any individual, but any omnipotent being that also supposedly possesses all-knowingness would surely not have a hard time communicating with this far simpler entity that already has devised ways for it to communicate with itself. You know, you just have to basically hack into that shit, leave your message, and you're done. Not very hard. But when you're saying, oh, the message is being interpreted by individuals which quite clearly should be in asylums, you're like, yeah, I'm not really quite sure that makes any sense to me. And why is it always that whatever's being communicated is what's so obvious to everyone else? Keep hearing, like, and they were talking about this. Rex was saying it was one of the main reasons why he believed is because of all these prophecies that came true. And meanwhile, you're like, yes, but many of the books of the Old Testament are not as old as they claim to be. They don't even prophesize what happened. They talk about what happened, writing in the, as if it's the past. It's all bullshit, right? It's complete nonsense. And even the stuff that you're saying, well, there's no way they could have known this. Nothing but vagaries. Oh, nations will rise against nations. There will be a lack of food. Woo-hoo-hoo! These are revelations. They happen.
Unlikely in the extreme.
I know, eh? Isn't it? So unlikely that nations would fight nations.
For we are civilized.
Yeah, we're civilized. And also, there is no hunger problem. Look around you. Everyone's overweight. There you go. There is no hunger problem. So yes, it was the sheer degree of force it requires to consolidate this belief was what I found surprising in Rex. Like just he clearly had an understanding for what I was saying. He clearly had an appreciation for it as well. And you can always tell when a person's genuinely listening and when they're not. And even sometimes I could tell that some of the things that I told him were troubling. But like what normally happens at the end of all conversations, they just brush it off and say, well, thank you for your time. And then they leave. And typically that's what happens when you have these kinds of conversations. Nothing. All right? If something happens, it's because they're going to come back and they're going to have some new arguments for me. This I promise you. But I'm actually not convinced about whether or not they're going to come back. I don't think there's going to be a time for. Mm-hmm. I think they've run out of guys that they were hoping to bring in and say, like, well, clearly Rex is very intelligent, very pervasive. If there's a hope, it's in him. And I'm like, I don't know who else they have here.
Well, now we got to wait for the Mormons to show up.
I'm still waiting for them to show up. I got so much to say to these Mormons that I'm almost afraid that on the first shot I'm going to scare them to death and there won't be time number two.
Well, I've seen them. They wander around the neighborhood. They send the kids out. These are like, God, if they're 19, if they're 20, I'd be amazed. So, be interesting. You might be able to pluck a couple of them from their idiotic belief.
It would be interesting, and I would love to watch it happen, although I do foresee another hasty retreat at some point. It tends to be, I think that's part of the training, actually. If you're feeling like you can't answer these questions, retreat. the answers are available to us, but don't let that back undermine your faith.
Available back at the temple.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Knowledge is available back at the temple. So as long as you figure, well, I don't know everything, surely the answers are out there, you fear not. You're like, oh, there are answers to these questions, trust me. And you look at them in the eye and you're like, no, they're not. The answers point in the opposite direction. There are no answers for you.
Well, you want to move on. You want to talk about no answers. It's basically atheists dealing with the enormity of a universe without answers.
Yes, but first, these commercial messages.
Who is that immaculately dressed man in the good atheist t-shirt?
That man slash woman is a fashionable person wearing the latest gear coming straight from the goodatheist.net, baby.
How can I get my hands on one of these shirts?
On just one? Don't be a fool, man. Get three, even though there's only one design. Jesus saves, you need to get it.
Buy this or burn in hell.
All right, we're back, and we're going to be talking about an email that I received from I think I mentioned this twice already, from a generous patron, but I feel that it is necessary to mention, because this is the bonus show, this is the patron show. I appreciate what patrons do. I try to answer as many questions and emails. I think anybody listening right now that has been in contact with me recently is willing to go out there and say, yes, Jacob has been very active in participating.
He's been a good little boy.
I've been a good little boy. I've been out there and I've been interacting with you because I asked for it. I was like, please, I need some interaction. When I don't get any, I feel like what I do doesn't matter. And when you feel like what you do doesn't matter, you don't want to fucking do it anymore. You're like, what the fuck is the point of this nonsense? So the communication part has been an important tool for me to ensure that I have a clear goal in mind, which is to please you motherfuckers. That's what I'm out to do. So let's answer Percy's email. Mm-hmm. The first thing I want to just say is, you want to say the gist of it? Because, I mean, I don't know if we want to read the
I can basically...
you want to read the choice passages?
Yeah, exactly.
Read the choice passages if you want.
Okay, this is Percy writes this. He says, I have two friends who are atheists but have a horrible view on the way of life. Both of them are nihilists. Yeah, it's one of those words I never hear. I just read it all the time and feel really discontent with life. They believe that the reason we live is to consume, produce, and die. This is the vicious cycle of life according to them. I argue that life is about making the world a better place and for your fellow mankind / womankind, your children and your ancestors. They both gave a counter argument that they don't care about anyone else. The only people who matters is themselves. One of them is in college and says the only reason he goes is to please his girlfriend. They have never read Richard Dawkins, Christopher Hitchens, or Sam Harris. They are not interested in meeting other non-believers. They basically don't give a rat's ass about anything, it seems like. Nor are they willing to change the mindset that plagues America and the rest of the world that is oppressed by religious views. So now down to the bottom. The topic I wish you guys to talk about is our existence on Earth in an atheist viewpoint. I highly doubt that you guys are like my friends who say that shit doesn't matter. We should just shut up and go with the flow. Is there anything I can say to my friends to make them feel more aware of their surroundings and how fucked up shit really is? Not only that, but that we can change it. Bill Maher and Religulous pointed out that atheists are the biggest group in America, not represented by any political form. We have silenced ourselves. Are atheists stuck in the mindset like my friends who say that it really doesn't matter?
Well, first of all, I want to talk about your friends, particularly people out there that have been messaging me a couple of couple emails of saying, one person in particular, she's married and her husband is agnostic and she's an atheist. And he's like agnostic to the point of, I just don't give a shit, right? I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
And we definitely know that there are plenty of people like that. In general, I don't really mind. It's not like everybody needs to be on the bandwagon. I'm like, you're either passionate about it or you're not, and that's all there is to it, and I'm not going to fucking bash you in the head if you're not doing anything about it, especially if you're listening to the show and you pay. But at the same time, some other emails that I was reading were from people who had previously described themselves in exactly the same way and underwent an experience that transformed their opinion about things, where all of a sudden they're like, you know what? One guy was saying that he was at he met this pastor who had told him that he performed exorcisms for real, that him and his wife were, excising people, and that they had basically studied like 2 weekends to do this, and they were feeling that they had cured all these people of their drug dependencies and all these other kinds of ailments. They felt like they were the good guys, and when that happened, it kind of fundamentally changed this guy. So he was like, I can't just sit back and do nothing anymore. I can't tell you that there's going to be one story that's going to basically convert a friend who just has that view away from that view. Something needs to happen that makes him care. You know, it's not going to be a speech, all right? That's why motivational fucking speeches don't work. You know, people are like, yes, you will take the first step in the rest of your life. And you realize that it's not just one step, bro. It's like a million. And then after you take a couple and you're like, all right, well, this is kind of hard. And that's typically when you just say,
just keep doing that for the rest of your life. Thumbs up.
So it is a bit of an uphill battle. And you know, when you don't care about these issues, it's easy to not care. It's easy to do nothing. And a lot of people, you know, they view their own selfishness, their own self-interest as nothing that's particularly wrong. And how are you going to, can you really fault them at the end of the day? No, but at the same time, you're like, you're not living a very interesting life, buddy. I mean, you have this idea that the only people that matters is yourself. You will realize in time what a disastrous kind of idea that is. You know, I mentioned a couple of podcasts back how I always said that I was rich in one thing, and that's rich in friendships. I mean, everything I do is always centered around these friendships. They're productive entities that I, you know, value for more than just the work's sake, but also the enjoyment and the fulfillment, all these things. I'm rich in that sense. A person who has none of those feelings, who really cares only for themselves, will have themselves only as comfort. And that is a quiet world indeed. That is not desirable as you get older, you know, the prospect of being left alone. Sure, you might be able to deal with it when you got some distractions, but later on you will realize that there's some voids, massive voids that form. So I would say that it's perhaps more important to pay attention to what our nature is rather than for us to get really upset about what the world means when there is or there isn't a God. I think the more important question is, what are we like? How do we want to live? You know, maybe that's all we can do. Figure out what's the best way for us to live. And what's wrong with that? It seems like a pretty smart thing to do if you were going to do one thing. How about figuring out how to live? I don't know. Seems pretty fucking basic right there, no? Am I crazy?
No, not too much.
But my point is, let's say that they're not moved by that. They're not moved by the idea of, I don't care really about the world because I'll die and nothing will really have mattered. Well, I'm saying that you should look at it the opposite way as well. I mean, like, you only have one chance, one kick at the can. You idiot. What are you going to spend it the whole time believing that there's just only you there?
There is a positive way to look at that, in a sense, that you are just one of many, an unimportant member of a hive who could do pretty much anything they want to do with their lives.
And not feel pressured to need to bow down or satisfy other people. You should try to satisfy yourself first. I think that's a really important part.
So long as you don't get satisfied by murdering prostitutes.
Yeah, like Jack the Ripper style. Mm. Not so good. We will admit that there's a couple things that we're like, no, you will not be developing these talents.
Then your nihilism has gone too far.
A little bit. Let's just say that it's fair. It's probably fair and balanced if your pursuit of your own happiness doesn't necessarily interfere with others. Now, we live in an imperfect world where our pursuit of happiness always interferes with that of others. We just try to minimize that to some degree.
And minimize our awareness.
Well, yeah, probably too. I mean, think about the impact of your life, you know, what the world is like in order for you to live the lifestyle that you have now.
Think about your cool new shoes, Jacob.
I know. I think about them. And I'm a dick. I'm a dick like probably the rest of us are dicks. Mm-hmm. Products of a dickish society that doesn't really care about the plight of absolutely everybody. Maybe that itself is a type of sick nihilism. of denying the importance of taking care of other people other than yourself.
Well, you know, a lot of atheistic nihilism comes from the fact that we're disillusioned with what society has to offer.
Well, there was this video I put up on the site just a couple minutes ago that was talking about these Indian godmen who basically step on kids, who just put their full weight on them to somehow cure them from whatever ridiculous ailments they think they're afflicted with. You know, just some kind of superstitious nonsense where they're crushing kids and some of them die of collapsed lungs and
they're
stuff
still
like
doing
that.
This now?
They're still doing this.
Cool.
Even today.
Great. Glad to hear that.
And you realize this, and then you also realize that this is what the majority of people are like. Completely ignorant, stuck in superstition, and wanting to unplug from that reality is not something that I will begrudge people. With that said, it doesn't go away just because you think you're ignoring it. It tends to kind of get worse. It's like just the other day when the toilet was starting to overflow, right? You can't ignore it. It's overflowing. This is happening right
now. You know, actually, I think if you had ignored it and not flushed it again, it wouldn't have overflowed over everything. I do believe that. Not blaming you, but I just like to point out in that case, it would have been better to just
You're using
not
a different way of ignoring. You're saying if you would have just let it be.
Well, I'm just saying this as well. Don't feel all the weight of the world on your shoulders, atheists. Things will probably happen with or without you.
It should be with, though.
You can help it along. You can be on the right side of history. You could say, I took a stand for these things that mattered to me. You know, and a lot of your friends, they might not give a shit about many things, but I'm sure they all care about at least one thing. I'm sure if you brought up someone getting stoned somewhere, they would get upset. Would they get upset enough to do anything about it? Yeah, probably not. But at least they'll check the right fucking box on a census form, hopefully, someday. And
I
that'll
actually,
somehow
you,
matter.
You know what? I would feel sorry for anyone that you talked that was like this, that felt no passion for anything. I think actually that is far more frightening. That if you take a nihilistic point of view, maybe you are incapable of passion. For who can have passion when you decide that nothing is important? You are the only person who really can and does decide if something is important. Now, the justification behind this, whether or not you think you did something important because God inspired you to, or just because you thought it was important, the consequences of it are the same. Which is why belief in God is not necessary to do something that is important. It's just that's the way that one person justified it in their brain. And they think, with their arrogance, that that was what made them passionate about it. And that was, well, maybe they're true in that hubris, but they thought that that was the only way a person could be passionate. And that's what's false. You can be passionate on a whole bunch of different levels. You can be a passionate atheist. I'm a fucking passionate atheist. I'm goddamn way too passionate sometimes. Just calm down. Affect my blood pressure. You know, I'll probably die a young man from being so passionate. If I was a little bit more nihilistic, I'd probably have a lot less stress. I mean, talk about carrying the weight of the world. Sometimes I feel like I do, or like I am doing that. It's ludicrous. Just one fucking naked ape. What do I matter in the grand scheme of things, right?
But you're not naked. You have clothes that were made by young children in other countries.
Well, yes. They're very young hands crafted my very clothing. I can feel their tears. I can feel them. But actually, I want to diverge away from what I was talking about, because I want to go back to this one thing that he wanted us to originally talking about, which is our existence on Earth from an atheist point of view. Because I was reading a whole bunch of Carl Sagan before I came to do the radio show, because I'm like, hey, if you want to hear an atheist perspective of what the universe is like, read some motherfucking Carl Sagan. That's the first thing that I'm going to suggest. Read Cosmos or read Demon Hunter World. Or
what about Pale Blue Dot? It seems well
Pale
illustrated.
Blue Dot. Yeah, that's a pretty damn good example, too. I don't know. There's a variety of books. I can't think of them all right now. I'll give you a good list and go read them immediately. But I figured Cosmos and Carl Sagan together would have crafted a necessary picture in my mind of how I want to describe life on this planet. But then I thought to myself, well, I don't want to just talk about life on this planet. I just want to talk about life in general, just as an idea. Okay? Because I find that even in Carl Sagan's writing, and he's probably correct in his saying, well, we don't know if there's other life out there. He wants to believe that it is possible. We only have one example of it, so we can't say for sure. But you know what? I'm beginning to feel much more confident about whether or not there is life on other planets. Maybe not now or in the past, but probably even in the future. I'm not going to speak in terms of what is in the past, but in the future, I'm like, I would definitely see lots more planets with life springing up, just because the fact of the matter is that everything really that we experience, that we see, our very existence is just a product of fundamental laws of nature acting on its, you know, just acting in the way that it does. It's just the rules are there. They act the same everywhere in the universe. Why would you not expect this kind of thing to be happening? Honestly, you really think that in the vastness of this universe, this immensity of just the sheer volume of shit, that you are the only one that is alive? No. That's just, I find that's absolutely ludicrous. Of course, at the same time, I'm like, are we going to talk to these people? I'm of the no camp. No, that's not happening.
Are they even people, or are they just mushy bacteria?
Well, some of them could be mushy bacteria. I think probably the mushy bacteria is all over the place, probably to an extent where you're like, this is a problem. There's a lot of this shit around. The intelligent life may be a lot rarer, especially when you consider, say, you look at the age of the Earth and you look at how long it took for organic life to form, which is relatively early on in the formation of the Earth, right? And within the first, they looked back and they said they life may have formed a couple hundred million years after the planet cooled. So not even a billion years, less than that. So you're just thinking to yourself, holy moly, this might actually start happening pretty fast when a planet's cooling. Considering how long stars can last, like, you know, the sun is going to be is stable, has been stable for roughly, or will have been stable by the time it dies, for 10 billion years. That's a good amount of time for things to happen. You know, that's almost the age of our universe right now, which is how long the sun will have remained stable. That's an impressive number. So when you think about that, like, if really life is contingent so quickly, but then you look at the time frame in which you really watch intelligent life develop, or even more complex life, like near the Cambrian explosion, where we really start having a good understanding about 500 million years ago, we start having a really good understanding of, you know, the different forms of life, of a huge range of complexity that just suddenly... Well, suddenly, geologically speaking, that forms, and just getting the ball rolling on complex organic life forms. Looks like that takes a while. So it might not even happen at all for some weird reason. Who knows? But the point of my point is that it's probably happening all over the place. It's just that the amount of time that a species has to be around is really brief. And time frames are huge, and distances are even bigger.
Yeah, don't make such a big deal about the dinosaurs. A whole bunch of species died.
Yeah.
Died the fuck out.
We're next. That had lived a lot longer than the dinosaurs as well.
Via revelation, we are next.
Yep, and so many of the things that we... You know, you look at a tree, and you look at a flower, and you wonder to yourself, huh, how long have there been flowers? Well, we actually know. Flowers are a fairly recent phenomenon, everybody. For the majority of the time where there have been plants on Earth, there have not been flowers. So you're looking at a very recent development. So it's something to keep in mind that everything you see around you is just the new shit. This is all the new shit. But there's been lots and lots and a huge history of some old shit that you just never even knew, that we probably won't even know about. Because I think they estimated that one in every billion bones can turn into a fossil. And that's the stuff you find. What are the odds of finding all those goddamn fossils? It's hard work. So, yeah, there's probably lots of pieces missing, stuff we'll never find out, like weird little insects that may have existed. I mean, look at the current weirdness of the insect world now, where you have ants that harvest leaves, and the bacteria on their mandibles emits a kind of, like, antifungus that prevents... like this fungus thing that the ants eat from going to growing too wild. It cultivates them, basically. They're farmers, farmer ants. They do the same thing that we do. They even cultivate cows, like called aphids, little creatures that they milk, and then they also bring back to their little structure, their farm, and they bring them out. They are like us.
Creepy and disgusting.
Yeah, much more biological. Much grosser, but still so similar to us. Imagine all the species that did cool, interesting shit that we'll just never know because those environments don't exist anymore. They didn't leave any evidence of their past. They just went, and they came and went, like we probably will, leaving, I assume, very little evidence of our past, except for one. So far, there is one thing that I can say for certain which will survive even the death of this planet. You know, when the sun engulfs the earth and basically incinerates everything that you've ever worked at, will obliterate it all no matter
how
good
you keep
it. Don't worry,
the sun will not have to destroy that. I'm sure by then it will already be gone.
But I think that's just, no, from the human perspective, that we just need to accept that the earth will destroy everything that you are going to make. It's just going to take a while, right? Even if you made just the most permanent structures, they will be destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
But the Voyager spacecraft that we send out that has now escaped past Pluto is not coming back. It's out there in the universe now. It can be found, even if it's probably impossible.
A galactic.
It can be found. It would be like one of those. Yeah, exactly. I think the odds, like if I take you and I transplant you randomly in the universe, there's a 10 to the minus 33 chance that minus 10 to the 33rd chance that you're going to appear where there's a planet. So that's 10 with 33 zeros at the end of it. That's the odds. One in that odd. Like, you could win countless lotteries in that time.
Hmm.
Lotteries are sort of like, oh, you know, 10 to the power of fucking 6 or 9. These are nothing numbers, pal. And yeah, it's rare. It's not going to happen. We're probably not going to communicate with anybody. But feel some degree of comfort that this shit's probably happening all over the place. Other weird intelligent species wondering, are we the only ones? Will we ever find out if there are others? Nope. You're going to die before you find out, bitch.
And we're supposed to take comfort in this. I like it.
You just got to get over it. Why does everybody need the world to be sugarcoated in order for it to be enjoyable? I mean, the fact that we're going to die, does that make sex less enjoyable? Does that make, a cold beer on a nice patio any less awesome? No, it really doesn't. I don't think it takes it away. In fact, I think it makes it even better, because if it lasted in perpetuity, then it means nothing. Heaven is the cheap cop-out for experiencing life.
And I still don't get heaven, because I don't even know if I'd be allowed to do everything I wanted to do up there.
Yeah,
so,
like, what's the deal with polyamory? Am I allowed to, you know? Like, if you marry someone and they're not into it, and then you go to heaven with them, and you're just like, I want to fuck around.
And what happens if you have a life where you have multiple great loves, and they all mysteriously die in car accidents or something? Just saying that this happens. You go up to heaven, what? Do you get all of them? Do they get all of you? What happens if some of... Like, heaven is a very subjective thing, and I'm just wondering how God parcels that shit out.
Well, here's the funny thing. Because a clever mathematician would tell you what he would do is that he would spend an eternity with every single one of them. Because eternity is so long that he could do that.
Mm.
But of course it would drive you mad to wonder, well, if he's spending an eternity with one, how is he spending time with the other? And you're just like, it's just eternity, man. Don't think about it like that. It'll drive you nuts. When you start contemplating infinities, you will fall into an insanity spiral. That's just a friendly little message there for you people out there. Trust me when I say that this is how people become mad. There's one surefire way to do it. It's to contemplate infinity.
Don't worry, you have to be really smart for that to work.
Yeah, that's the good news.
Otherwise, you quote-unquote figure things out.
Otherwise, you just don't get it, and it doesn't matter. Maybe it's better that way. That you just don't get it. You just don't fucking get it.
Mm-hmm. So you're, in summation, your view of the atheist place in the universe is just that the universe is wonderful, and that should be enough.
I just think that the fact that you're here...
I'm not saying that it's a negative thing.
That should
thing.
Be enough. No, just the fact that there is a universe should be enough for some people, I think. Don't you find? What is missing? What else do you want? There's a universe. You are alive. What is the fucking damage? What is the problem here? Everything's fine.
probably the that we're not doing a very good job of taking advantage of our awesomeness.
I would, you know what I would love? I would, this is my dream, and this of course is why it is a dream and will never be realized, but I dream of a world where we can get another, like, renaissance. Why not? You know, if you were to ask me what would ultimately be the goal of creating, like, of atheists getting together and start discussing, is like the last time a bunch of non-believers got together and started talking, you know, it created a revolution of philosophy and mathematics in ancient Greece. You know, some amazing things happen once you start getting rid of constricting dogma that is based on nonsense. That we could really all come together and say, hey, check this out. We know more about the world than we've ever known, ever. And by leaps and bounds. You know, by the fact that your grandparents, like during their childhood, the fact that they thought that the universe was no larger than the galaxy, even within their lifetime, and the understanding that there are hundreds of billions of these galaxies, is a significant shift in the way that we see the universe. And that happened just a couple generations ago. Feel like, realize that this renaissance really is kind of happening. It's just that it can be better. We have not really hit the plateau yet of this. This is not, we're letting our old bullshit traditions hold us back.
Yeah, I just, you know, it, you worry about whether or not we're just getting obsessed with the nitty-gritty or whether or not the nitty-gritty is actually taking over. Because that's how I feel sometimes as an atheist, is that the nitty-gritty is taken over and we are just sidetracked to all hell.
Yeah, we're worse than one of my tangents. That's what we are. And I think that it's the same thing when you're debating, say when I was debating the Bible again with the Jehovah's Witnesses, where you're debating something that isn't important. I know it has an importance to people. But the truth of the matter is that these are myths. And when you start debating in storytelling, you're wasting your time. These stories are stories. Just get over that. It's not a manual to living. Once you accept that and you realize that there is a broader, wider world of thought, then you're going to be surprised. You're going to find yourself that it feels almost like a renaissance in a sense. Like, I think that anybody who tells you that they're an atheist will always, you know, be honest and say, I can't go back because I just see the world so much more broadly than I did before. You know, I have the blinders on. Anybody who tells you that they're religious and they're very open, I'm like, you're still not open enough to get rid of these superstitions. And it's hard to do. We still have all kinds of superstitions. It's just hard to let go. It's hard to admit that you're wrong. It's hard to admit that you have no control. It's hard to admit that all this shit doesn't really end up mattering to anyone but ourselves. But at the same time, it doesn't need to matter to anybody but ourselves. And in fact, we need to be the ones that are more concerned with it. You know that whole in God we trust? In invisible male patriarch you trust? No more. You have been trusting humans. You should probably continue to trust them. But not some invisible deity that doesn't offer you anything other than more confusion and more strife in your life and in the life of other people. I mean, I would say that's my problem with God, basically. You just... What an idea that is divisive. By its very fucking inception. It's I don't know, I guess it just makes me sad. Okay, well, I guess we'll call that a show, since I went off on a tangent. I hope I answered the question well enough on the existence of Earth in an atheist perspective. It's kind of a all-over-the-place question, so I'll give you an all-over-the-place
answer. Well, we definitely gave the nihilists something to think about.
If they listen to this, I don't think they're going to listen to this podcast. First of all, they'd have to go through the first part of it to get to the second part.
Don't worry about specifics.
All right, well, if you're going to get your friends to listen, they're not going to make it through the first part. So just, you know, choose your moment in the podcast. All right. And that goes for everybody out there that says, I want to get my friends to listen to The Good Atheist. My suggestion to you, your homework, find the part of the show that you think they're going to like and make them listen to that one. Because who wants to listen to an entire show sometimes when you don't know if you're going to like it? Just smart. Smart thinking. Okay. I'd like to thank everybody that's a contributing member. We grateful for all your support. We're currently trying to work on a new version of the site, and your input is going to be appreciated. I'm going to be putting up polls and questions that I want you people to answer. Participation is really appreciated. The more input you guys give, the better job I'm going to make. So,
yeah, do you want it to be more like a bloggy thing, or a community thing, or a funny thing, or a serious thing, or a what thing? What thing would you think for this thing?
What do you guys think is missing in the atheist scene? What do you think that we do right? It could be a combination of a lot of things, but input is the paramount process that needs to happen. So you guys are critical in that. And again, I mean, many of you are probably listening to this who have been receiving the shows simply because I'm paying for input. I'm like, here's some shows. Tell me what you think. Give me some input. It does me a world of good. Okay, with that, my name is Jacob Forte.
And I'm Ryan Harkness.
Have a good Atheist Day, everybody.